The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Clear the confusion in your relationship and pinpoint the behaviors that are making you crazy. Visit loveandabuse.com, download the Mean Workbook, and find your way back to sanity.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani and I am here to help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that can affect your physical or mental health. All right, so I received a 12 or 13 page email. It wasn't that long, but it was long. And it was a few months ago, and I just have not been able to get to it, and I want to address it here and now. I'm not going to read you the email, but I'm going to talk about the subject matter, which is about developing a relationship on the phone before you ever meet, and then you meet, and who are you? And are you showing up as that person that you meet? So it's a very specific thing. That's not the only thing I'm going to talk about today. Actually, in the next segment, I'm going to go over what the signs are of a great start to a romantic relationship. So I'm going to go over this email first, and then on the next segment, we're going to talk about what does a great relationship look like when it's starting. And yes, this can work for current relationships. So if you've been in a relationship for a while, you can think back on when you first met and were you experiencing these signs, and did it lead to something wonderful that you're experiencing now, or will you notice signs that you didn't know were red flags, and now here you are in a relationship that isn't fun, or isn't making you happy, isn't fulfilling you, and is just difficult? So let's talk about that. That's something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. I have about 10 things that I believe will be good signs that a relationship is going to go well. I think they're important enough to consider. Not that these are hard and fast rules, but I think it's important to consider these items that I'm going to talk about. So before I get to that, like I said, the first segment is talking about a message that I received. This was a long message I won't be reading on the air, but the relationship started on the phone. And this is the perfect generation to talk about this, because how many relationships now start on the phone, or really on the internet? Because there are so many dating sites out there now, and some have risen to the top, and those are the ones being used most. So we sign up for a dating site, and we hope that the person we're communicating with, first through email, then on the phone, is the right person, is the person that we can connect with in some way. And if it doesn't work out when we meet, then at least we have a friendly conversation and it doesn't turn into something weird or something like that. I have personally used dating sites to meet my wife. And then when I got divorced, to meet my current girlfriend. Did I use it for anything else? No. I've been successful on online dating sites, but I'm a guy. And I don't think, and I'm just going to talk about the heterosexual population right now, I don't think guys have it as tough as women on these dating sites. Because I have a feeling that guys are more likely to embellish their profiles. I'm not saying that women don't. I think that guys are more likely to sound more attractive in many ways. Not all guys. I know my first dating profile, I probably made it sound like I was all good and there was nothing wrong with me. We like to think that about ourselves, I'm sure. But when a guy puts that out there, there's nothing wrong with me, you know, you want to know what else is there besides this profile that you laid before me. Women do this too, but in my experience with the women I've talked to, the clients I've talked to who've met men online, they tell me that more of the time the guy shows up and the picture's wrong, it's outdated, they are older than they appear on the picture, they didn't represent themselves well, or they have the signs I'm going to talk about in the next segment, and it just turned out to be a bad match. That's an aside. I'm not going to talk about online dating necessarily on this episode, except to mention that it is a current method of meeting someone that we just need to be aware of. I might have to do a whole episode on this one day, but we do need to be aware that what we read on someone's online profile isn't the totality of that person. I know that's basic information. I know you know that, but I just want to drill that in just in case you are at all naive about what might be going on online. There are some dating sites that are a little bit more thorough and they ask a ton of questions so that the person's personality comes out and it's not just what they wrote about themselves, but there are compatibility options in there and the dating site kind of matches those people that are most compatible. And that's helpful. But bottom line is that it's the future. We don't have hover cars, but we have online dating, and online dating is something that a lot of people are using now. So it's a good idea to remember that what you are reading isn't something you should fall in love with. It is something that should pique your interest. And again, I think you know this. I think everyone listening knows this. But I just want to kind of put that out there, because what happens after you connect with someone online is you either get into email or you go on the phone. Now, I'm a big fan of email first. I want to know what they're thinking through their words and how they convey those words. I like that. Plus, it shows that they're willing to go through the slower steps of communication. I really appreciate that. They're willing to not just jump on the phone and then meet the next day. I'm not a big fan of that. I want someone who actually wants to take their time and learn about me, just like I want to learn about them. That throws up an orange flag for me when they say, I mean, this hasn't happened to me, but it has happened to my clients, where typically a woman will be communicating with a man through an online dating site, and the man will be like, oh, let's just get on the phone and let's make a date for tomorrow. Let's just meet right away. And I just don't like that. I just think that's an orange flag. I'm not saying it's a problem. I know that there are people out there that just want to meet and really connect and make sure that they're compatible. And it could be a great thing. And if both people that want to meet want to do that, that's absolutely fine. I just like the idea of getting to know someone incrementally. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, because that's one of the signs about incremental growth of a relationship. But when you meet someone, especially through an online dating site, you kind of want to get to know them. And I believe you should get to know them a little bit before you commit to meet. And that's a good thing. And it can also backfire. I'm not saying that it's a perfect way to do it. It can backfire. The email I received is a person, I don't know if they met online, but they talked on the phone for hours and hours a day. And he finally decided to fly out to meet her and spend a day with her. And when they met, things moved really fast. So fast that it scared him. So fast that he was like, whoa, you know, this reminds me of someone I used to know. And she was kind of crazy. And now I'm with this person and she wants to move fast. And we're talking about the future and commitments. And he was really scared. So they enjoyed some time together. And then he pulled back and said, I don't really want to do this anymore. This is moving way too fast. You know, maybe we're just not the same type of people. But he left the relationship, and all those, I forget, weeks or months that they were talking, pretty much all that investment they had into each other stopped. It was done. They met and it was done. And that's when the backfire can happen, because when you're on the phone with each other, when you're on email with each other, and you're falling in love with the concept, the representation of them in your mind, you know, falling in love might be the strong word, but it's kind of what happened to me when I met my wife. I was falling in love with her on email and phone and text, and I hadn't met her. It'd been like a few weeks. It'd been several weeks before we ever met, but I was falling for her, and I didn't even know what she looked like other than one single two-dimensional photo. And so what I did was create the representation of her, which was perfect in my mind. And when I create this perfect representation of her and I go to meet her, some matched, some didn't. And it was still magical. It was still wonderful. But getting to know each other throughout the months, more and more was revealed and did not necessarily meet my expectations. So it can be a challenge. And so coming back to this email where he met her and was scared immediately when they started talking about commitments and long-term stuff, he backs off and she's like, what? You know, let's live. Let's live for today. Let's do this. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And she wasn't asking him to marry him or anything. She just got to know him over the phone and fall for who she represented in her mind as him. Now, he did represent himself to her, but she only had a limited perception of him through his voice and probably through emails and text. And that is something I want to warn you about, is that, yes, a long-distance connection can and does work. It can work wonderfully when you meet and suddenly there's sparks and everything is wonderful and the relationship grows from there. It absolutely can work. But I want you to be really careful when it comes to creating a representation of someone in your mind, because what we tend to do is only see the positive aspects of them. And it's so important to understand the negative aspects of them. And how do you do that? Because usually we're talking to someone and they're sharing the positive aspects of them. I'm going to talk about it in the next segment about being vulnerable and sharing harder truths, but I think it's important to just keep in mind that when you have a representation of someone in that mind, you make sure that you're not filtering out anything that you don't want to be there. In other words, if they said something on the phone that made you think, that's questionable, but then you find yourself justifying it, you'll want to add that quality or feature to that representation in your mind so that you don't put those rose-colored glasses on and not see what's really there. Again, it's sort of hard to do, especially when they're representing themselves in a certain way and they're not telling you everything, but that's when it's most important to really dig so that you understand that after you meet and after the honeymoon period, who is this person going to be? Because the phone calls before you ever meet physically is the honeymoon period, and that can last months. Especially if you never meet in 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, that whole time is the honeymoon period. And then when you finally meet physically and you connect and you're intimate and you are starting to be together more and more, that honeymoon phase slows down. The passion slows down. It's not that you can't keep the passion. It's just that the intense desire and wanting of the other person, it starts to decrease because now you have the other person. Now you're not driving an hour to the beach because you live 5 minutes from the beach. I hope you get that reference. You know, you live 5 minutes from the beach, you never go to the beach. But if you live an hour from the beach, you're more likely to go to the beach because it's a special event. Or, you know, whatever. It's probably a bad reference. But you get what I'm saying, is that when you have that person in your life now there's not so much of a deep burning desire to go see them because they're in the next room. So this is great. And it also tells you where your homeostasis is. You know, where are things going to settle when the honeymoon period is over? And that is what you add to that representation in your mind. That is what you start putting in there. Okay, so I've got this perfect person in my mind and he or she is saying all the right things. And I feel really good about it. Everything's in line. So let me go through the process in my mind. Okay, we meet, we connect really well, the sparks are flying, the passion is there, we spend a lot of time together, everything is wonderful, and now we're settling. Okay, great, I don't have this burning desire that I must see them all the time and be intimate with them all the time. It's waning a little bit, but in a healthy way, in a good way. Now I'm starting to get a taste of what they want to do in their life for themselves. Because that's what it is. In the honeymoon phase, we want to do things for each other. I want to do this for you. I want to help you wash the dishes. I want to dress my nicest. I want to style my hair perfectly. I want to wear my good clothes. And when we finally grow through that phase and out of that phase, we can be a little bit more comfortable. We start picking our teeth in front of each other. We start being more open about, I don't know, some people, bodily functions. We just start being more ourselves. And okay, how do I put that representation of who they are when they're not seeking to impress me? Who are they when they're not seeking to impress me? And I think a good question to ask when you're in that courting phase with each other is, what do you like to do when you're single? When you're not seeking someone to date, when you're not in a relationship, what do you like to do? And they could say, well, you know, I like to play my guitar. I like to bowl. I like to sit around and play video games. You know, what are the answers they give? Really put them through that scenario. What do you do when you know no one's looking? What do you like to do? And hopefully they give you real answers, because that's the trick. We want to make sure that the person we're talking to is giving us authentic answers. And you can even ask them about previous relationships, like asking the question, after you guys met and, you know, you were together for 6 months, 12 months, how did things go? Did you start doing your own thing? What were her hobbies, his hobbies? What did you do in the relationship? Did you do things by yourself? Were you always together? You kind of get into that line of questioning. So you steer them toward revealing things about themselves that would be more likely who they really are, not necessarily that is who they really are, but what they more likely lean toward when they're in a relationship that is more comfortable, more settled. I think that's the vibe of this, is that you want to ask them questions about who they are in a relationship when things have settled down. And you could even ask, well, did your partner ever get mad at you for things? Did they ever get upset that you left the toilet seat up or down, that you left the toothpaste cap off, or that you left the bathroom a mess, whatever. You know, you ask these questions, not that you're grilling them or anything like that, but just so you find out what they say. If they say, oh, my partner loved me, everything I did was perfect, you know, it's a little suspicious. Because I don't think that's possible. But, you know, you use your best judgment. Those are the kind of questions that I think are important to add to the representation in your mind. So let me get back to this email. With this email, this person said, you know, she scared me off, and now she's upset that I'm scared off, and I don't want to really make future plans with her because it just all happened too fast and too much. And he's asking me, am I overreacting? Can you read these messages that we sent back and forth? And am I missing something? Or am I just being ridiculous? Or I forget how he asked it, but I looked through all his messages. And from what I can determine, she was a very in-the-moment thinker. This is what I want to do in the moment. This is who I got to know. This is the representation I had of you. And now you're here and you're scared. And this isn't who I thought you were, because we had all this talk about, you know, what we're going to do when we connect and what this can turn into. And now you show up and you're kind of freaking out. Where are you? So what he was going through was he was getting triggered, thinking that, oh my God, I don't want this to move so fast. This is kind of freaky. I would ask you the question, the person who wrote that email, were you who you wanted to represent before you got there? Or were you just trying to impress? Because if you only wanted her to know the good side, the impressive side of you, and you show a different side of you, one who is afraid to commit fast, one who gets triggered because of someone who commits that fast or someone who moves that fast, and that wasn't conveyed in who you are in your life, then I would put the responsibility on you. Because if you just want someone to be impressed by you and never be frightened about anything that you say because you might scare them off, then you're likely only going to tell them what you believe will keep them around. And that is, we're going to talk about in the next segment, something else that will cause the relationship to fizzle out fast. Because if you are not sharing things about yourself that you know may scare her off, then you're not sharing enough. I know that sounds a little weird. I'm going to talk about it next. But for the person who wrote this letter, thank you for writing this. And I don't think you're overreacting. I don't think she's overreacting. And I know that some people are listening saying, well, what happened? Well, they met and they moved fast and he realized that she wanted the commitment too fast and that scared him off. So he kind of broke it off. And they had been talking for, like I said, weeks or months, getting to know each other, falling in love with the representation in their mind. I don't know if he was in love, but that's kind of what we do. We fall for the person, the representation that we have of that person. And then when we meet them and that representation doesn't match, then we have our reservations and we pull back. And this is what happened with him. He pulls back and he thinks to himself, whoa, what am I doing? This person is moving way too fast. But if you had asked the right questions, it may have worked out a lot better because then your representation of that person is more accurate. So that's why it's important to not just try to impress the other person, to not try to not scare them away, but to be your full self so they can make a more complete picture of you and you can make a more complete picture of them. So when you went out there, I'll just call you Bob. Bob, when you went out there and you met with her, and you really connected and sparks were flying and things moved fast. And then you felt like, whoa, she's talking crazy. I don't want to commit this fast. What would be the next right thing to do from that point? I think it's important for you to know that when you develop a relationship long distance and then you finally meet, that background counts for many people. I mean, the buildup, the background, you're talking for weeks and weeks and weeks. On the phone, through emails, through texting. That counts as the buildup of the relationship. The, whatever you want to call it, the physical consummation of the relationship is part of the buildup. And so when that physical consummation, the physical meeting, the actual physical connection happens, that is seen as part of the entire process, the entire incremental step-by-step process for some people. And they see it as part of the relationship as a whole instead of, I just met you that day. So I don't know where your head was, Bob, when you got there. It seems that her head was already in the game. She was in the relationship already for quite a while. And it almost sounds like you stepped into the relationship on that day, which tells me that maybe you weren't representing yourself as well as you could. So that when you stepped off the plane or whatever and you met her, she could have known you better. She could have known you well enough to know that you're not the kind of guy that moves fast. So these are, you know, there's some responsibility on both sides. She has a representation of you. You have a representation of her in your mind. And then you meet and you're seeking that representation, thinking that it's there. And then suddenly things change. This is why long distance relationships can be harder, because the person you meet doesn't match the representation. There's no easy answer for you, Bob, except that the next time you, if you choose to do this, if you choose to create a long-distance relationship before ever meeting, is to not fall for your representation of her and to not fall for how she represents herself on the phone or through email, and to know that a lot of people will think the start of the relationship is a lot further back when you were on the phone, when you were in emails, when you were texting. And then when you physically meet, you're at the tip of the iceberg with all of this history and background that you may not be taking into account. Now, I will say this, Bob, if you are afraid of commitment, if you are afraid because of something in your past that triggers you, because in your email you said, she reminds me of someone that scared me, someone that was a little crazy. If that's happening, then yes, you probably do need to work on that, because anyone you meet who wants to commit might make you feel that way. But it would be interesting for you to think about you meeting someone physically and being with them for a number of months and then talking about commitment. Would it scare you then? Because if you look at this long distance relationship as you being together for a number of months, but not physically, it kind of equates to the same thing for her. That's my guess. I know there's a ton to unpack here, Bob, but that's all I have for you. The long distance part of a relationship can be difficult because we make these representations in our mind. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the 10 signs of a great start to a romantic relationship. So maybe this will help you, Bob, for your next relationship, and I hope it helps anyone listening. We'll be right back after this. The 10 steps to a great relationship are coming right up, but what about the hundreds of signs of a difficult relationship where you're pulling your hair out trying to figure out what's wrong in the relationship? What is going on? Why is it so difficult? Why is it so complex? Well, there could be some emotional manipulation or abuse going on, and you don't even know it. I think a lot of people don't like to use the word abuse, so they don't even look up the term emotional abuse and find out what it is. Because they can't see their partner being abusive. And I see this over and over again. I don't even like to use the word abuse because abuse can be representative of something much more sinister. But in my experience, emotional abuse can be just as sinister and can sometimes even have a longer lasting effect than physical abuse. All types of abuse are very difficult to deal with, of course, but emotional abuse seems to have the effect of being able to make you feel bad about yourself. And make you not trust your decisions and make you feel like you just can't do things on your own because you end up becoming more and more reliant on the person who's being emotionally abusive. And that creates a traumatic bonding that makes you think that you're stuck, like you can't exist without this person and you have trouble existing with this person because they make you feel bad for being yourself. And your self-worth starts diminishing, your self-esteem starts diminishing, and you go into a state of crazy-making because everything you try to do to make the relationship better fails. And as you'll hear in the next segment, there's going to be a lot of components that I refer to that keep you out of an emotionally abusive relationship. So definitely stick around for that. In the meantime, if you are already in a relationship or know someone in your life, family member, friend, that no matter what you do, you can do nothing to please them. They're always dissatisfied with you, or they're always making you responsible or feeling guilty for your seemingly benign or even supportive behavior. You're trying to show up as everything they need, and they're still unhappy with you in some way, shape, or form. There may be emotional abuse involved. So I want you to go to loveandabuse.com and check out the Mean Workbook. See if it's right for you. Look at the website. Look at all the qualities of an emotionally abusive relationship. The workbook is made for romantic couples, but I tell you what, you can use this for anyone in any situation because you're going to have the same signs and symptoms of emotional abuse and manipulation, verbal abuse, that, like I said, you may not even know you're experiencing. Because who wants to label their relationship as abusive? Who wants to even say, I'm being abused? I don't want you to have to say that, and I hope it's not you. And I hope that you don't need this workbook, but I put it out there because I know it's important. And I get testimonial after testimonial saying thank you for this workbook because it highlights and pinpoints exactly what was going on. I have no doubt in my mind what's happening now. So if you're in one of those, this is way too complex relationships, download the Assessment and Healing Guide for Difficult Relationships, the Mean Workbook, at loveandabuse.com. All right, welcome back. Like I said, I want to talk about the signs of a great start to a romantic relationship. Let's hit this list. It's 1 through 10. Number 1 is the other person is not afraid to be vulnerable with you, but they do so from a place of strength, not pity. So they're not seeking pity. They're not trying to make you feel bad for them. They're not playing the victim on purpose to suck you into some sort of drama in their life. so that you'll activate your compassion and empathy. You probably will. You'll probably activate your compassion and empathy, but what is their purpose? Are they just telling you, like, oh, you know, this person died in my life and I felt really bad about it and it still hurts, but, you know, I'm getting along fine. See, when I say something like that, it's coming from a place of strength. I hurt, I feel it now, but I'm working through it. I'm working on it. This is what I'm going through. And you might activate your compassion and your empathy, and that's great. But if you feel the vibe that the other person is still in this bad or hurtful place, then you're going to see the difference between someone who is working on themselves and someone who's seeking comfort from outside themselves. Not that there's anything wrong with that. They're both fine. But in a new relationship where you are showing up for someone else in a certain way, what I like to look for is the other person being vulnerable from a place of strength or seeking pity? Someone seeking comfort from you too soon could amplify in the relationship later so that they're always seeking more and more comfort from you. And, you know, this is what happened with me in my first relationship, my first long-term relationship. I always wanted comfort from her. I was always seeking happiness from her. I couldn't be happy without her. It was a highly dependent state. I was always needy. I was clingy. And at first, when the relationship first starts, that can be attractive to some people. It can be very attractive that the person always wants to be with you. They must adore me. I must be so lovable. But what happens is, as the relationship settles, as the honeymoon phase starts to decrease the intensity of it, then hopefully you both settle into a space of, I'm fine in myself, you're fine in yourself, and we both enjoy being with each other. But if you do sense that the other person is tending to play victim more and more to gain that support, and you notice that they thrive on that support from you, I just want you to be aware that it could be an orange flag. And the only reason I bring this up is because two types of people do it. The one type is the highly dependent, I need you to complete me type of person. I need you in my life to be happy. You are my source of happiness. You are also my energy source. I am low on energy. I'm low on fuel unless you're around. And those types of people can be very, very draining. I speak from experience. I was one of those people. And the other type of person can be the manipulative type. I just talked about the Mean Workbook, where someone can show up as playing the victim to someone else who has a high level of compassion and empathy to take advantage of the person with that high level of compassion and empathy to draw them in so that this person playing the victim can make the other person feel sorry for them so that when the controlling starts, the controller, the abuser, can make the other person feel guilty for not doing what they want them to do. And that's when it turns really bad and starts becoming more and more emotionally abusive. So that's number one. They're not afraid to be vulnerable with you, but they do it from a place of strength, not wanting or seeking pity. The number two sign of a great start to a romantic relationship is that neither of you have to make continuous micro adjustments to your behavior. What I mean by that is you notice that they don't like when you do something, so you adjust that behavior to make them happy. And this also has two sides of the coin, where if you make an adjustment to make your partner happy and the relationship gets better, the relationship improves and makes you both happier because of it, it might be a compromise that is healthy and positive for both of you. But if you find yourself making micro adjustments more and more and more to make the other person happy, and you feel yourself becoming more and more diminished, less and less authentic, then what you're doing is becoming less and less yourself. And you keep diminishing yourself while you're adjusting to fit with their wants and needs. And as that happens, the relationship starts to fail. So this is a very important sign that if you find yourself making these micro adjustments to your behavior to make sure that they're happy, but they're not doing the same thing, they're not doing the give and take and the little compromises that you do in relationships. I was just telling a client the other day, you know, when I met my girlfriend, if I showed up as fully myself, 100%, and didn't change a thing and didn't do a little give and take like I believe we're supposed to do in relationships, then I would wake up at 2 a.m. and crank the music, and she would be startled out of bed and be really angry with me, and I couldn't show up as that person. I can't show up as 100% myself as if I'm living alone. And so I would compromise a little bit, like, okay, I won't play loud music at 2 a.m. I never did anyway, but let's just say that was me. I won't play loud music at 2 a.m., and I'll give that up. But it makes her happy, and if she's happy, that makes me happy, and the relationship improves and grows, and she appreciates me that I'm honoring her, and it just makes life much more pleasant and the relationship much more bonding and loving. So that's what I mean, that if one person is continuously making micro adjustments, like, okay, I won't play my music at 2 a.m. and okay, he or she doesn't like when I do that, so I'll curb that as well. Or he or she doesn't like when I laugh too much, so I'll curb that as well. He or she doesn't like when I watch that TV show, so I'll stop watching that TV show. Pretty soon, you're going to lose yourself. And as you do this, you lose more and more of yourself while they gain more and more control over who you are. They're shaping who you are. So just make sure if you start to see this in yourself, or you even start to see them do it, you want to bring that up. You want to make sure that you're aware of that so that it doesn't get worse. All right. Number three is they're responsive to texts and calls and emails. Remember, this is the start of a romantic relationship. But I've noticed this with a lot of clients that I've worked with, that the person they start dating, at first, like the first few days, they're highly responsive. The person wants to get back with you. You send a text, they respond. You call them, they call back if you didn't answer the phone. You send them an email, not as popular as text nowadays, but you know they get back as soon as they can because they actually want to hear from you and they want to reconnect with you. Where you have to start being aware that something might not be right is you send a text and they don't respond. Or they respond the next day, and then they give you some weird, stupid excuse. I mean, that can happen once or twice, and maybe I'm being a little harsh, but it can happen once or twice. But you got to look at the pattern here. Is this developing a pattern? People who are in a romantic relationship that want to be with each other are responsive to each other. They want to hear from the other person, and they want to reach out to that person. So just keep that in mind. That's a sign of a great start to a relationship if you're both responsive to each other. Number four is there are no weird moments that you need to guess about or justify. And let me reference that to number three. For example, I had a client that I hope she's okay with me revealing this, but nobody knows who I'm talking about. She sent a text to someone she started dating, and they were getting along great. They were connected. They were bonding. And she sent a text one night after a date or something, and she said, "Miss you." And the other person, I don't know when he responded. It was a while later. And he just wrote, "Thanks." And I heard this and I just, my mouth opened. I was like, wow, that's kind of insensitive. Or maybe he just doesn't feel the same. But it was one of those weird moments. And when she started explaining this to me, I felt like she was justifying what was happening. I felt like she needed to guess what he was thinking. She needed to guess where his head was at. And yeah, she could have had any number of possible explanations that may have been accurate. She could have said, well, you know, maybe he's not as close as I am. Okay, that could be a good guess. That might be it. Or it could be something else. But it was one of those weird moments. The relationship was flowing along nicely, and then this weird hiccup. And this is when we get these relationship hiccups, we tend to guess what the other person's thinking, or we start to second guess ourselves, or we justify what it was. Oh, well, he must have been tired. So that's why he just said thanks instead of, I miss you back. You know, the relationship where you both want to be with each other, you're going to have a different type of response than, hey, thanks for sending that. You're going to have the type of response that says, wow, thanks for thinking of me. Even if you don't want to say, I miss you back, you can say, hey, thanks for thinking of me or something. But there was a lot of emotion lost in that text. And, you know, texting is kind of an emotionless thing anyway. But, you know, words have to go further when you're writing them out, if you're not talking. So I wanted to add this to the list, that if there are these weird moments that, everything's going along fine, and now there's a weird glitch here. What is that about? Don't try to guess too much. Don't try to justify. I prefer just talking about it. Hey, you know, when I sent you that text and you just said thanks, that was kind of cold. I mean, maybe you don't feel the way I do. Let's talk about this. maybe that's a conversation you don't want to have, but I think that you should have. I think these kind of conversations need to come up when these weird glitches arrive, because you want to find out what's going on, where they are, instead of guessing and justifying and trying to figure it out. All right, that was number four. Let's go to number five, and this is a really good one. They are not love bombing, gift bombing, or showering you with too much attention. Now, love bombing and gift bombing is when they're giving you all these compliments and they're loving on you and they're doting on you a lot. Or they're giving you lots of gifts. They're buying you stuff. They're taking you out a lot. And the trouble with this one is that in the beginning of a relationship, it's so desired and wanted by so many people. Oh my God, they love me so much. I'm so lovable. I'm so attractive to this person. I'm attracted to this person. I am getting so many gifts. He or she must love me. She or she must really adore me. I don't like to see this at the beginning of relationships at all. And I'm going to risk saying this knowing I could be wrong, but here it goes. It's a red flag when you're showered with gifts or affection in the first 2 months of a relationship. I said it and I could be wrong, but I'm going to say it's a red flag when you're getting love bombed, gift bombed, or getting showered with too much attention in the first 2 months, 2 to 3 months. Because what that person is doing is saying, please, please love me, adore me. And it could be a form of manipulation. It often is, actually. When someone's showering you with gifts and love and attention and affection, and you feel like a king or a queen, you've just never been treated so nicely, you have to be really careful. That's way too good to be true, especially at the beginning. But even throughout the relationship, that kind of showering of attention and affection, although nice, it's better when you are with someone a long time that you can trust their intentions and know who they are underneath so that it doesn't seem like some sort of ploy to get you to love them. Because what happens is you can fall for someone who does that for you, and because you fall for them, they lure you into a control model where they now have power over you because you've fallen for them because you feel so special in their eyes. And when you feel special with a person that just wants to control you, it's very difficult to release yourself of that control because you're constantly seeking more of that attention, and then they stop giving it and they become a different person. Then you spend the rest of the time wondering where they went and hoping they can come back because that's who they were when we first met. And boy, that can really play a job on your mind. When you are lured in with all this love and attention, and then they switch over to not being that person, and you're constantly looking for that old person, that person you know is underneath, but it was probably a manipulation of some sort. So that's something to be very aware of and very careful of. And I will say this, it can be not just a form of manipulation, but like I said at number one, it can also be a highly dependent person. And the reason I say that is because I was the type of person who would do that. I was the type of person who really wanted someone to love me. So I would buy things and shower her with love and gifts and affection. But I was also clingy and smothering, and I wanted to be with her all the time. Again, it was nice in the beginning because she'd never felt so special. This is like my first girlfriend again. But what happened is she got very jaded by it and very worn out by that personality quirk I had. She felt too smothered. She felt that I was too clingy. So that put a damper on the relationship. So remember number five, if you're in the beginning of a relationship, any love bombing, gift bombing, or showering you with way too much attention, you need to back off a little bit and take it in. What's going on here? Why is this happening? This is a little too much. And if you are suffering from low self-esteem, low self-worth, not feeling like you've ever had someone adore you so much, and you're soaking it in, this is when you can become victim. This is when you become very vulnerable to someone's predatory ways. I'm not saying everyone does this, and I'm not saying everyone that gift bombs and love bombs turns into a manipulator, but I just don't like it. So I can't really justify it. I just don't like it. But if it worked for you, write to me and said, hey, my partner or my husband or my wife love bombed me, gift bombed me, and it worked out great. It was the best relationship ever. If that happened to you, let me know. I would love to hear about it. When we come back, we'll start at 6 and get to number 10, and then we'll end the show shortly. Be right back. right, the number six sign of a great start to a romantic relationship is that the relationship seems to flow in a balanced way, not a roller coaster way. I briefly commented on this earlier, but let's just say that you have a great evening one day and a fight the next, and you find that you have to work on the relationship already before things even get started. You're in the first 2 to 3 months. Before things even get started, you're already starting to work on the relationship. Now, that's not to say that any relationship that starts off like this can't work out. When I got with my girlfriend, there were things about the relationship that weren't working out well at all. It was because she had trouble trusting men in general. So when I stepped onto the scene, I'm a man, she can't trust me, and it took her a while, I mean over a year, to start really letting me in to be a trustworthy person in her life. That wasn't the only thing, but having that as a big obstacle in the relationship was very difficult. It did make the relationship be more like a roller coaster. I mean, other things were working out great. This is why I stuck around, because everything else was working out great, but she, for some reason, couldn't trust me. Like, I would say, this is what I'm going to do, and she wouldn't believe me. And she would ask, well, why are you going to do that? And what do you mean you're going to do that? And she would ask me all kinds of questions about it. And I said, can't you just trust me that I'm going to do it? And she said, no. She said that a few times in our relationship. And I was like, well, that sucks, because it hurts. It hurts that you can't trust me, that you don't think I have your best interest in mind, and you think that I'm going to do something when I said I'm not going to do it, or I'm not going to do it when I say I am going to do it. That hurts. So there was a bit of a roller coaster, but I'm talking about you're at the very beginning of a relationship. That is a warning sign that instead of things flowing because you want each other, you desire each other, you want to be with each other, you're always seeking out and reaching out to each other, that usually helps the flow in the balance of the relationship. But what about when it's a roller coaster? What about when you have a great night and then a horrible day the next day and then a great day the next day and then a bad week and then a great week? If that's happening in the first few months of the relationship, one of you needs to take a step back and look at what's going on. You know, what's going on here? Why is this happening? There's something deeper we need to look at here. We need to talk about this. I love having those conversations. That's why I stuck around with my girlfriend, because she was willing to talk about it. There was nothing hidden. She never said, well, I don't know. Nothing's wrong. I don't want to talk about it. She never did that. I brought up these subjects. I brought up the subject of not feeling trusted, and she wanted to talk about it. She goes, well, this is how I feel about it. And it was great. We could actually have a conversation about it so that I knew what was going on. When you know what's going on, at least you can work with the person and try to figure out, okay, is this going to work out or not? But when you're left in the dark, when you're not privy to information that is going on in their mind, and you're having a roller coaster, just not a good sign. So that's number six. Number seven is you both share hard truths that you know the other person may not like. And the reason is because you know it's more important to filter out incompatible people than impressing them in hopes that they won't leave. I'm going to read that one to you again. You both share the hard truths that you know the other person may not like because you know it's more important to filter out incompatible people than try to impress them hoping they won't leave. For example, when I started talking to my girlfriend on the phone, I told her things that I believed would push her away. I actually was almost purposefully repelling, at least in my mind. I told her things that I believed she wouldn't like about me. Not that they weren't truth. I told her things that I believed were truth. Like one of the things, and this is minor, is that I was never going to move out of New Hampshire. And she lived in Georgia and she couldn't leave her kid. And if I never moved out of New Hampshire and she couldn't leave Georgia, then there couldn't be a relationship. So when I told her this, she was like, okay. And she had to accept that that was my truth. And I knew that that would probably be the end of our romance that was starting. And I didn't want to lose this relationship, but at the same time, I wanted to be myself. I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to show up as me. And what you find out when you share hard truths is if the relationship will be resilient enough for you to be you and for them to be them. Will it be resilient enough for you to share the hardest things about yourself and the other person stays? that shows a possible bright future for a relationship when you don't separate after something like that. I told my girlfriend when we were friends, just starting out, I told her that I was broke, I lived with my mom, that I had a business that was failing. I told her all of this stuff that I knew would make me the worst possible candidate to date ever. Not that I was trying to get rid of her, not that I was trying to push her away, but because I wanted to show her that I was honest and that I wasn't trying to impress anyone, I wasn't trying to impress her, and that this was my current situation. And I knew that if we continued to communicate after that, the rest would be a lot easier. Everything else we talked about would be a lot easier because I got the hard stuff out of the way. It's that eat that frog concept. You wake up, the very first thing you do, it's in that sales book. Eat that frog means make the hardest phone call. Talk to the hardest person. Talk to the most toxic person first. Do the difficult thing first. You eat that frog. That's the metaphor. So that's what I did in the beginning of our friendship. It wasn't even a relationship. I just spoke my truth. And it was funny. We talked about it. It was funny. And our relationship survived that. And this has been the easiest relationship I've ever had because it's all out in the open. It's all on the table. And I'm willing to take the risk of the relationship ending for the reward of the relationship strengthening after it survives the hard truths. The number 8 sign of a great start to a romantic relationship is the other person treats friends, family, and strangers with kindness. My girlfriend always says, how they treat the waiter today will be how they treat you later, or how they treat their mom or dad or whatever. I think that's a good gauge when you see someone treating you kindly, but other people horribly, or specific people horribly. They lie to someone, they deceive other people, they are cheating in business, they're pulling the wool over people's eyes. You have to watch out for that behavior because once that honeymoon phase is over and you come into the settling phase, their personality everywhere else becomes their personality in the relationship. So that's a good thing to keep an eye on, how the other person treats their friends, family, and strangers. Is it with kindness? Are they singling out specific people? Are they angry with specific people? That's the behavior you'll see when they're no longer trying to be impressive to you and show you their best side. Just something to keep in mind. All right, 2 more. Number 9, they're decisive and they aren't afraid to take responsibility for their behavior. I've seen way too many partners that lay all the blame and guilt on the other person. If you feel guilty a lot, you're probably with the wrong person. Because relationships are a partnership where you both take responsibility for what's going on. If one person is always pointing the finger at you and you always feel responsible, you always feel guilty, you're not in a partnership. You're with someone who doesn't want to take responsibility, who doesn't want to be the bad guy or girl. You're with someone who wants to make sure that they don't feel any hurt or pain or no one looks down on them, so they push it all on you. They have subtle ways of doing that. That's emotional abuse as well. But if you find someone that is decisive and they aren't afraid to take responsibility for their behavior, very good sign. Very good sign and a great start to a romantic relationship. All right, let's get to number 10 and finish this up. Number 10 is they don't breadcrumb you. And this kind of goes along with number 3 of they're responsive to texts and calls and emails. Breadcrumbing is an emotional abuse term where someone stays in touch with you very intermittently, but enough to keep you interested. And it's almost always the indecisive, non-committal type that do this. And they do it, and I'm going to say it, and I might be wrong on this too, they breadcrumb you because they usually have something else going on and want you as a backup plan just in case. So you could go a week without hearing from them, and then they'll say, hey, how's it going? They'll just send you a text out of the blue. Now, friends can do that. That's fine. But what if you were in a relationship, and you were connected, and everything was going great, and then a few days go by, and you're wondering, where are they? They disappeared. And you're not sure where they are, and they're not really sharing what's going on in their life. And then they just send a text or an email or a phone call out of the blue and say, hey, how you doing? And they don't even mention the last few days that they disappeared. That's one of the signs of breadcrumbing, is that they keep that carrot dangling in front of you just enough so that you don't lose interest completely. And this could be months. Sometimes they do this months apart. They could call you or send you a message out of the blue 3 months after you broke up and then say something as if nothing ever happened. And you're like, what the heck? They might say, thinking of you. And you might think, oh my God, where is this person coming from? It's out of left field. But they may have done a number on your emotions, and now you're getting sucked back in thinking, oh, they're thinking of me. Wow, maybe there's a chance for the relationship to work out again. You got to be very careful of breadcrumbing. It's an evil thing, because what they're doing, I believe, is they have something else going on and they want you as the backup plan. I don't ever want you to be a backup plan. Never be that just-in-case person. Just in case this doesn't work out, I'll call her. Just in case this doesn't work out, I'll reach out to him. Because you're worth so much more. I don't want you to get sucked into breadcrumbing. You'll feel awful. And you'll never achieve closure, pretty much forever. You walk around with this feeling of unfinished business because you're continuing to get breadcrumbed. Because they're continuing to reach out with just enough frequency that keeps you believing that there could be something more. You need to stop that behavior in yourself. Stop falling for that. Especially when they pretend like nothing ever happened in the past few weeks or a few months. Or if you notice the pattern, like they breadcrumb you or they reach out to you and you get together and everything's great. And then a few days later, they're doing the same thing. They're non-responsive, non-communicative, not reaching out anymore. You need to break that pattern and say, oh no, I am worth more than that. I'm not a just-in-case person. I'm not a backup plan. I'm all or nothing. Don't walk around with that unfinished business feeling. You are worth way more than that. Thank you for joining me today. We'll be right back and I'll close the show after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. Remember to go to loveandabuse.com if you want to check out the Mean Workbook on manipulation and emotional abuse in relationships. I also want to thank the patron members over patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. They are big time supporters of the show. For example, Julia, she's a new member. Hello, Julia. Thank you so much. And I want to thank some of the long-term patron members, Elizabeth, Mandy, Stephen. Hey, you were supposed to write to me, Stephen. Send me an email. Jamie, Cher, John, Jennifer, Zachary, and Lena, and so many more that have supported the show for well over a year. Thank you. And if you value the show, if your life is changing because of this show and you want to show your support, go over to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, and that's a great way to do it. And you can also get private episodes and all the workbooks and worksheets in there, including the Overwhelmed Brain book. I have that on PDF in the member section, so check it out. And let me tell you about the Safe Empowerment System for Social Anxiety. That is a work in progress. I am collaborating with many experts in the field of social anxiety to not only get you the best information on social anxiety, but also a way out so that when you're in a moment of social anxiety, you can slip your earphones on and listen to a 1 to 5 minute, what I call emergency mini pod, that walks you through and hopefully diminishes it or even dissolves it completely so that you can get on with whatever event that you're at or wherever you are in whatever situation. Social anxiety shouldn't have to control your life. I want you to take your control back. Head over to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/safe. There's a survey there if you want to take that. And before it launches, I believe in January of 2019, you can pre-order it for 30% off. And that'll give you a discount. So if you're interested in checking that out, what it's all about, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/safe, S-A-F-E. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And last week, I thanked my girlfriend. I thanked her for doing all the work on our house hunting and house getting needs. We are in the middle of the due diligence phase where we're filling out all kinds of paperwork. And we offered, they counter-offered, we accepted, and then we found problems. We've got a wonderful house that we both want, and we had a septic inspection, and the septic guys came out and found that the new owners never, ever pumped out the septic system. And I started reading online how many people actually don't take care of their septic system, And it turns out quite a number of people, quite a number of you listening right now, haven't had your septic system pumped out and probably should. You might have roots. You might have garbage in there. I'll use the safe word, garbage, junk, stuff that might stop it up and eventually end up on your bathroom floor and in your living room and in other places too. So there's my public service announcement. But we had the septic system checked out and it's awful. The pipes are crushed, there's roots. They just never had it maintained. So unfortunately, that sounds like it's going to be taken care of by the seller. And we may actually get this house. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm just sharing this as a personal comment on what's happening in my life. Not that some of you care, some of you don't. But there is a lot of personal growth lessons when you're going through this. You know, the stress of hoping that everything goes well and hoping that the seller continues the process and hoping that the loans go through and you get the right APR on the loan. And there's a lot of variables and it really tests your emotional health. It tests your system. And I found myself very, very easy going through this process. My girlfriend, not so much, but she's doing a lot of the work. She's doing all the paperwork. She's getting everything lined up. And so I'm just so grateful for that. And it does help keep me out of the line of fire a lot. But at the same time, we're ready to move. And we've been ready to move for the last 2 or 3 years. We just haven't had it line up yet. And this is it. It's where it's lining up. And everything seems to be synchronizing well. And like I said, the personal growth lesson in this for me is it's a lot easier to go down a path that seems to forge and form before you. Instead of having to find where the path twists through the woods and pick up the trees and trip and fall and slip in the mud, when there's so many obstacles it feels that are in your way, it almost seems like you're not going in the right direction. I'm not saying that's always the case. Sometimes it takes a lot of hard work to succeed at something. It takes a lot of obstacles to come up and challenge you so that you can get past these obstacles and get to what you want. And that can be rewarding as well. Like climbing a mountain can be very rewarding for the person who likes climbing mountains. To say that I did it and I had all these challenges. But it sure seems that when you are trying and fighting and struggling on one path, that maybe another path is meant to be. Yes, there's a little spiritual aspect to this. Like what meant to be? What does that mean? Does that mean the universe has a plan for me and I'm going against that plan? I don't know. I just know that when challenges come up and the challenges continue to cause you to fail and cause you to trip and fall and slip in the mud, then maybe there's a path that hasn't been considered and it probably can be considered and maybe should be considered. Maybe that is the path that you should take instead of this one. And I like to look at relationships in that way too. Just like I was saying, there's a roller coaster of a relationship and then there's a more balanced relationship. I think I'd rather be in the more balanced relationship where you have a problem, there's a fall and a rise, and then you're back at that balance point again, as opposed to the fall and the rise, the fall and the rise. Oh, it's great one day, it sucks the next day, it's great one day, and then one day they're at work and you finally have a day of peace, and then it sucks the next day, and then you go on and on and on. Any type of relationship that is that kind of roller coaster, to me, you just can't take it anymore. You just get to that point where I've had enough. And sometimes you have to reach that breaking point. Like if we reach this breaking point with the house where, oh, if something else goes wrong and something else goes wrong, that's it. You know, let's just give up the house. It's not worth it. I don't mind walking away from things when it's just gotten to that point. I'm not saying it's easy and I'm not saying that I will all the time. I'm just saying that it's a choice. I want you to have that choice. I want you to be able to make that choice where this is such a roller coaster. This is not balanced. This makes me miserable more than 50% of the time, which is a good gauge. If you're miserable more than 50% of the time, maybe it's not the right path. Maybe it's not the right direction. Maybe it's not the right person. Maybe it's not the right job. Maybe it's not the right environment. Maybe it's just not right. So what can you do about it? You just have to assess everything and figure out maybe there's another path for you to follow. Thanks for allowing me to talk about my house. I'll let you know if we get it. And in the meantime, keep your mind open because you never know what path is going to lay out before you. And that path may be a step into your empowerment. And when you're empowered, you can be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.